From the land to Grand Theatre University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the first day of June 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes at Total Farm Marketing. The state statisticians from Iowa, Illinois, and Minnesota will be here to discuss crop progress in their regions. We'll take up the agricultural cash grain segment with Greg Johnson of TGM Total Grain Marketing, and we'll hear about the weather forecast, too. That would True Learner at World Weather Incorporated, all on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $7.31 and a quarter. That was down 22 and a quarter cents. December at $6.91 and a half, down 20. July soybeans 7 higher at $16.90 and a quarter, and November at $15.15 and a quarter a bushel, up 5 and three quarters. Bean meal down $2.10. The bean oil 19 cents higher. Wheat futures were down 46 and a quarter for the soft red at $10.41 and a quarter in the July, and the hard red July at $11.28 and a quarter. Down 37 and a quarter cents. Live cattle futures were up $2.52 and a half for 100 pounds at $132.90. The feeders at $169.72 and a half, $4.60 higher, and lean hogs at $112.42 and a half cents, up $4.42 and a half cents on the day. Crude oil up 50 cents a barrel at $115.16. Jackie Vakes of Total Farm Marketing, that's totalfarmmarketing.com, now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in a very busy week of trade. Thank you, Jackie, for being with us. Let's start with those support and resistance levels, the managed money, those kinds of things, and then we'll get into the daily trade, which has been pretty wild the last couple of days.
Pretty wild is kind of an understatement is what it is. For July, we've got 707 and 824, September 685 and 779, December 674 and 715. On beans, July 616 and 1741, August 1514 and 1692, November 1387 and 1555. For gold in June, 1845 and 2082. Dow Jones 31,532 and 36,952. US dollar 99.5 and 102.98. When we look at managed money, Todd, on soft wheat, short 1,000 this week, just like they were last week. Corn, they dropped 49,000 contracts down to 248 versus 297. Beans, they added 20,000 contracts to their longs. Soy meal, they added 7,000 to the long, and soy oil, they dropped 13,000. They went from 84,000 down to 71,000. I have been tracking the index traders because they hedge for inflation, and I think that both of these, the managed money and the index traders, give us a little bit of background on what's going on right now. When you look at the current week for the index traders, they dropped their corn positions by 14,508, added beans 7,148, and dropped their wheat by 8,459. So it kind of gives you a little bit of a picture of what's been happening. When we look at export inspections, wheat's still 21% behind, just like last week. Corn 17, just like last week, and beans 13 compared to 14 last week. So nothing great there as far as helping us prop the market up too.
Yesterday, the United Nations, Russia, Turkey were all in conversation about potentially trying to figure out how to move grain out of the Black Sea area. That dropped wheat precipitously. Follow through overnight and through the day trade, corn down as well. What have you made of these moves?
Well, you know, you look at corn was following wheat. There's no question about it. I thought it was interesting. We were only able to close one contract in wheat down limit. So therefore, there were no expanded limits today. I think one of the things that hurt us today was that Ukraine is a large portion of the wheat that's going to Egypt, and they're sending it there through Poland, Romania, and the Baltics. And so that certainly didn't give any reason to support wheat. And then, of course, we had rain in France, which, of course, a little bit of rain saves everything. So I think when you look at the big picture, the concerns, you know, over these record high gas prices and what it's going to do to consumer demand is definitely a big one. You know, the refiners just can't keep up with the demand from the U.S. and Brazil. You know, we're back to pre-pandemic levels. And when you look at the combination of pandemic closures, sanctions on Russia, export quotas in China, it's really making it hard for those refiners to be able to meet the demand. China and Russia are two of the three biggest refining countries after the United States. So all three of them are below peak processing levels. And so, you know, that's undermining the effort by the world governments to lower prices, you know, by releasing crude oil from the reserves. And it's just not working. Let's put it that way. So I think that's a big driver in this, too, as well as we have a very nothing 30-day forecast. There's nothing there that is threatening to the crop. There also isn't anything there that says it's going to be wonderful either. In the back of my mind, Todd, is when do we come in and actually address 1 million corn acres that aren't planted yet, the 3 million bean acres, and the 3 million spring wheat acres that remain unplanted? That's going to come back into the market at some point in time.
I'd like to turn your attention back to the gasoline oil issue. What do we hear from OPEC? There's got to be tremendous pressure on them at this point to try to produce more.
Well, there's no question about that. You know, they're talking about removing, we don't know if this will ever happen, but they're talking about removing Russia from their oil production group, which would open up the opportunity, you know, for Saudi Arabia and some of the other countries to actually produce more. And, you know, they're getting a lot of pressure from the U.S. and the European nations because, you know, with oil over $100 a barrel, and we know that oil is priced in U.S. dollars everywhere in the world, it's putting a tremendous amount of pressure on these economies. And so I think that the big key or the big question, Todd, is going to be, will it happen? That's going to be the question. I kind of think that it might. I don't know. I think that there's an awful lot of pressure, you know, and we saw the rally in oil yesterday just kind of go away when they started talking about the idea of exempting them from the oil production deal. So, you know, you never know. This is a serious situation we're looking at.
And then, of course, we have to think about what China will do and whether it will remain open. It's starting to open back up a little bit. I say remain open, but they have closed down some cities, some big cities. I take it they're starting to move out of COVID some at this point again?
Yeah, our niece and our nephew live in Shanghai, and today is the day that they're able to move freely around the city, and thank you God for that, because I'll tell you what, they were running out of food. So many of the people were just begging because they didn't have an opportunity to get out and get anything. So, but a lot of the factories and the businesses are still going to close, so it could take weeks, if not months, before they get back, you know, and are up to a full running capacity. And so this whole COVID lockdown that started in March has just crippled them. And so hopefully, you know, it'll help. And they're very worried about labor shortages because that's something that, well, we're all dealing with it. There's no question about that. That, you know, it could knock business and consumer confidence down even after they open up. And when you talk about labor shortages, I saw a blurb that robot orders are up 40% this year. And, you know, robot orders were always big in the automotive industry. This is in the non-automotive industry. So what does that tell you? That tells you, you know, that's the McDonald's, that's the everywhere where they just can't get help. And so I tell you, it's a challenge. There's no question about that.
Anything else before I let you go?
Well, we talked a little bit about frost in Brazil last week. It was light and patchy, so the Safrinha corn made it through. But the yields in western Mato Grosso on corn are down about 35%. And we did talk last week about that, too, because of the light rains. You know, they haven't had any significant rain in the western Mato Grosso in 60 days now. And the other thing I had was that companies like ADM, Bunge, Cargill, they're all going forward with this goal of zero deforestation down in Brazil. And up until now, they didn't have a good way of really monitoring it. Now they claim that they have a 100% way of being able to determine whether the grain that they're buying is actually considered to be illegally deforested by Brazilian law. So that may reduce some of their grain coming into the facility. You just don't know.
Hey, thank you. I always appreciate the things you dig up.
Thank you, Todd.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Total Farm Marketing. That's at totalfarmmarketing.com. Yesterday afternoon, the United States Department of Agriculture released the weekly crop progress report. It shows as of May the 29th, 61% of the corn crop has emerged. 68% is the rolling five-year average. 86% of that crop has been sown, and 87% is the five-year average. 66% of the soybeans around the nation are at least in the top 18 states, which represent about 96% of all the acreage, has been planted. 67% is the five-year average, and 39% of the soybeans have emerged. 43% is the five-year average. 72% of the winter wheat is headed. 76% is the five-year average, and the condition of that crop is 25% good, 4% excellent. Last year, that number was 40% good, and 8% excellent. Now, here are updates from Illinois, Minnesota, and Iowa.
This is Melissa Bond. A few days of welcome rainfall meant Iowa farmers had 4.1 days suitable for field work. Field work activities included planting, cutting hay, and applying chemicals. Topsoil moisture conditions rated 1% very short, 10% short, 80% adequate, and 9% surplus. Planting is almost complete, with 94% of Iowa's expected corn crop planted, 13 days behind last year, but equal to the five-year average. 73% of the corn crop has emerged, 6 days behind last year and 2 days behind the average. Iowa's first corn condition rating of the crop year was 0% very poor, 1% poor, 13% fair, 71% good, and 15% excellent. 85% of soybeans have been planted, 11 days behind last year, but 6 days ahead of the five-year average. 45% of soybeans have emerged, 8 days behind last year and 1 day behind the average. Pasture condition rose to 63% good to excellent. Pastures and hay growth were good as rains replenished soil moisture. Pastures are in good shape for livestock. For the USDA NASS Iowa Field Office, this is Melissa Bond.
This is Mark Schleusener, Illinois State Statistician with the USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service. Illinois farmers and ranchers had 3.9 days that were suitable for field work last week, and farmers used those days to plant corn and soybeans, harvest hay, prepare fields for planting, and to apply fertilizer and chemicals. Soil moisture was rated 4% short, 72% adequate, and 24% surplus on Sunday. Soybean planting moved forward by 13 points and is now three quarters finished. That compares to 67% for the five-year average on this date. 52% of soybean acres have emerged compared to 50% normally. Corn planting reached 89% finished. That compares to 84% normally. 76% of corn acres have emerged compared to 71% normally. The first corn condition rating for the season shows 3% of corn acres in very poor to poor condition, 23% in fair condition, and 74% of Illinois corn acres are rated good to excellent. 91% of wheat acres are now heading, and that is equal to the five-year average. The condition of the wheat crop in Illinois improved slightly and was rated 15% very poor to poor, 25% fair, and 60% good to excellent. Finally, pasture conditions declined slightly and were rated 7% very poor to poor, 20% fair, and 73% good to excellent. In other news, NASS is now collecting data for the June acreage report, the June hogs and pigs report, and the off-farm grain stocks report. All results will be published at the end of June. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
This is Dan Loftus, State Statistician for the USDA NASS Minnesota Field Office. Favorable weather conditions allowed farmers 5.0 days suitable for fieldwork during the week. Topsoil moisture supplies are rated 0% very short, 2% short, 70% adequate, and 28% surplus. Corn planting reached 82% complete. That's 21 days behind last year and 10 days behind the five-year average. Corn emergence reached 42%. Soybean planting was 55% complete. That's 22 days behind last year and 12 days behind the five-year average. Soybean emergence reached 20%. Spring wheat was 53% planted and 10% emerged. Oats were 78% planted and 50% emerged. Barley was 48% planted and 20% emerged. Dried well beans planted was 20%, potatoes planted at 78%, and sugar beets planted was 65%. Pasture condition was rated at 3% very poor, 10% poor, 32% fair, 47% good, and 8% excellent. For the USDA NAS Minnesota Field Office, this is Dan Loftus.
Our thanks go to the state statisticians for their weekly updates of crop progress. One other state to report on, because it is the farthest behind, in North Dakota. Only 23% of the soybeans have been planted. Normally, that's around 70% for the five-year average. Last year, that number was 86%. The corn crop there is 56% in the ground. 92% was last year, and 83% was the average. And here's some of the statistical methodology that is used for the Crop Progress and Conditions Report. According to USDA NAS, crop progress and condition estimates are based on survey data collected each week from early April through the end of November. The non-probability crop progress and condition surveys include input from approximately 3,600 respondents whose occupations provide them opportunities to make visual observations and frequently bring them in contact with farmers in their counties. Based on standard definitions, these respondents subjectively estimate the progress of crops through various stages of development, as well as the progress of producer activities. They also provide subjective evaluations of crop conditions. It is a survey that is only subjective. For instance, this week in North Dakota, 56% of the corn crop is said to be planted. That's of what those who are looking at that crop, but that do not have usually a direct impact on whether the crop is planted or not, expect will be put in the ground. So 44% yet to be planted. However, that number could jump dramatically in 1 week if those respondents believe that more of those acres will go into prevented plant. That date was May 25 for corn in North Dakota, so it could jump dramatically next week, but not actually be put in the ground. USDA is now taking a survey of farmers to determine what acreage they have planted to which crops. That number will be released on June the 30th. Greg Johnson of TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us from the Grain Elevator here in Champaign County. The system covers a good portion of the southern part of the state. Greg, they grow some wheat there. Can you tell me a little bit about wheat and what you're seeing at this point?
That's right. Wheat was limit down yesterday and followed up today with another 50-cent move lower. That has basically had the effect you would think it would have. The farmers are not selling. I mean, if we could turn back the clock, obviously farmers would probably sell a little bit more wheat at those higher prices, but this caught everybody by surprise. And so before you know it, 2 days later, we're down $1.20 in wheat. And while it's still a very good price, it's not as good as it was 2 days ago. And so the farmers have not changed their marketing strategy yet. I think they're going to wait and see whether this talk between Russia and NATO, Russia and the UN, will allow corn and wheat shipments to leave Ukraine or not. So a lot of uncertainty about that, but it has not translated into any farmer selling. This is still a very good wheat price. Yes, we're $1.50 off the highs, but you know, I've been around long enough that, you know, $6-7 wheat historically has been a very good price. And I know we've got inflation and higher input costs, so we need a little bit more than that. But wheat is still over $10. And so, you know, it's still a good price. If you knew you were going to have wheat and sold it at $10, I think we would make money this year selling $10 wheat.
And despite the Tuesday sell-off, prices for corn and beans are very good, too.
Yes, very good prices. And again, you know, they sold too soon last year, if you talk to them. And so they just don't want to make that same mistake this year. They're going to be a little bit slower on the trigger. They really want to see pollination, how that affects things. They also want to see, you know, how many acres Brazil is going to plant. China is talking about buying more old crop beans because the Brazilian crop was a little light this year. So there's a lot of unknowns, a lot of uncertainties, and farmers, like I say, after last year, they're just a little bit reluctant to get real aggressive yet. I don't know when that will be. It might be around the 4th of July, around pollination time, or if they really feel like the demand is there and the crop isn't, maybe they'll hold on even longer. But to this point, they've been extremely tight holders. We think we're only 15 to 20% sold on new crop corn and beans. And normally we've got at least a third of the crop purchased by now.
Hey, thanks, Greg. Greg Johnson is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing. Drew Lerner is now here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. That's at worldweather.cc online. Hi, Drew. Thanks for being with us. Let's start in the Canadian prairies because they've had an awful lot of rainfall. That'll work us into North Dakota, and we'll have to talk about them as well. But what kind of conditions do they have? Can they maybe run this week or not?
Boy, I'll tell you, the biggest challenge they have right now is the temperatures. It is cool up there. There's a lot of water standing on the ground. Yes, the weather is going to turn drier, and that will be very helpful for allowing some, you know, runoff to take place and some drying. But temperatures are going to be in the 60s, maybe a few lower 70s is about all they're going to see for the next 7 days. Nighttime lows will be in the 40s and lower 50s. That's just not quite warm enough to really dry down that region quickly enough before the next rain event comes along. So I'm a little concerned that the areas that have the excess moisture, the areas that are actually standing with water, those areas, I think, may end up not getting planted. But the rest of the region, the areas that are just muddy, I think there's a chance they can get in and really do some work. They'll have, they've got those floaters, and they can get in. And some of these guys have even broadcast seed before, and I think there'll be a big effort to try to do that with the world prices being what they are. So I don't expect to see a huge amount of abandonment up that way, but it isn't an ideal scenario. But at least they will be able to go the next 5 to 7 days without a big rain event, and that's really huge for them.
I want to talk a little bit about those cooler temperatures. They're not only there, but I think across a large part of the Corn Belt over the next 7 days as well. And I want to put that in relationship to growing degree days, because we have a late planted crop, and the further we set it back in its maturing process, the warmer it probably gets in July, when the corn crop in particular is trying to pollinate.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's a really smart thing to be thinking about at this point in time. You know, the general attitude right now is, we are late, but the crop has got good moisture out there, and the focus is that the crop is going to do all right with the moisture around. But you're right, the coolness isn't going to help things too much, and we've learned from the past too that some of these corn crops that stand in wet fields for a long time isn't always the best for their production either. So the coolness is going to be around for a full week, maybe 10 days across the Midwest. And most of the anomalously cold air is in the prairies right now and the northern plains. But as we move forward through the next 7 to 10 days, the core of that colder than normal air mass will drop southward and will be over the western Corn Belt and portions of the central plains. And we will see that temperature anomaly definitely notable in those areas. And you're right, the degree day accumulations will fall off. We expect this cold air mass to begin to moderate as we get into the second half of next week, into the following weekend. That's when a little better ridge development may start to occur across the High Plains region, but it will continue to perpetuate a northwesterly flow aloft. And that may just kind of bring on some more showers and keep the temperatures a little cooler longer than a lot of folks would like to see. I think the earliest that we could push the ridge into the middle of the Corn Belt, Western Corn Belt, would probably be sometime around the 12th through the 14th, something like that. So until we get to that point in time, we are going to have this cooler bias around.
And one final note, we probably should check in on the wheat crop in France. It was dry, it was hot. What do you think today?
Yeah, the French are going to be celebrating a little bit because they do get a break in their pattern coming up. The breakdown in their ridge of high pressure is expected to begin to occur as we get into the end of this week. So probably Friday night or Saturday, and certainly over the weekend, there will be showers and thunderstorms in France, Germany, the UK, even parts of Italy. And all of these areas have been drying out here recently. So this is a really big news item for them. I'm not convinced that they're done with the dry, though. So it's going to be very important that they get a sufficient amount of moisture. I think that there will be some ridge building that will come back in at the end of this 4-day period in which rain will fall. And it will heat back up again. So this will buy them some precious time. Really important, I think, that they get this event. Moisture totals are probably going to run from maybe a half to 2 inches. A lot of variation from one location to the next. And you know that these small grain crops at least can go a long ways with that. The rapeseed maybe may need a little bit more down the road, but the bottom line is that there will certainly be some relief coming up. And I think that that'll point them in a better direction, at least enable them to handle the next ridge of high pressure, which comes later next week.
Thank you so much.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org. The theme song for the Closing Market Report is written and performed by Tim Gleason. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.